Welcome to the Early Years Web Summit with me, Kathy Brody of kathybrody.com. In this summit, we're investigating children's personal, social and emotional development, and most importantly, some strategies for helping support children in this key area of development. Today, I'm very excited to be joined by a longtime personal friend of mine, Michelle Myers, also known as Mrs. M when she writes on my blog. She's a writer and blogger, but first and foremost, a busy mum of three. She's a carer for her autistic son, but has also worked for over 15 years in childcare and education as a nursery manager, then as a high-level teaching assistant. She went on to specialise in supporting children with autism in primary schools, as well as providing training and support for teachers and other learning support staff. She's started writing a blog as a way of sharing her story and raising awareness, which has led to a Facebook support page for others, professionals and for parents as well. And it can be found here at A Slice of Autism. And you'll find that link there next to us on the website right now. I'm absolutely thrilled to be joined by Michelle. Welcome to the summit.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. It's lovely to see you on here. Today we're going to be looking at personal, social, emotional development, but particularly for children on the autistic spectrum, because that's your area of specialism and you've seen it both as a parent and in nursery and in school. So I just want to draw on that wealth of experience that you have there. Before we go on to personal, social and emotional development though, I know your blog is really, really popular and I just wanted to have a little brief chat about how that came about and what it is that you get from writing the blog.
Well, I think obviously I was working full time in mainstream school up to about 2 years ago. And I was sort of going to work every day and sort of speak to my friends about kind of funny situations that would happen at home. And they would always say to me, oh, you should write this down. You know, you should share this. You should, you know, it's an insight into sort of your world, really. Like, for instance, the time that my son decided that he wanted to dry himself. So he tried to climb in the dryer because that's where things get dried. You know, so I would sort of go in and talk about these stories and we weren't sort of laughing at him, but it was just a way for me to sort of offload.
Yeah.
And often the stories would end up being sort of quite amusing because he did get up to some stuff when he was younger. The one occasion I can think of is where we needed to buy a new coat for him. So we went to Marks and Spencer's and he is very specific about the sounds of textures and things. So he proceeded to try this coat on but wanted to know how noisy it was. So rolled around the floor in the middle of Marks and Spencer's. As you can imagine, we got some funny looks.
Yeah.
You know, this was the kind of thing I would sort of go in and talk to my friends and colleagues about. And but it wasn't until sort of my situation at home changed quite drastically, really, and he wasn't coping in school, so I had to give my job up.
Yeah.
Because I had to sort of part homeschool him effectively. He was only managing about 2 hours a day in school at this point.
So
I kind of hit rock bottom, really. My sort of mental health deteriorated quite significantly. And it was just, it was hard. And I remember feeling quite lonely and quite isolated and feeling like I was the only person going through this. So that's when I thought, you know what, why not give it a go? So I started writing down just, you know, writing down things that happened just as a way of me sort of processing, really, everything that was going on to start with. And that's when a few people sort of got wind of the fact that I was writing and I was brave enough to kind of press publish and it went out there and I sort of never really looked back from then, really. So I just know how scared I felt. I wasn't sure how honest I could be in my writing because that's quite scary. There have been many times when I've written and I've been really scared to press, you know, publish because I've been quite open and quite honest, and warts and all is kind of a phrase that I came up with. But I just felt that I had to be, if I was going to do it, then I had to do it properly and let people know what life was really like. So that was kind of where it started, really. So,
so I can understand how that met a need for you, but you've gone on to write for The Mighty, Special Needs Jungle, Autism Parent, SEN magazines, all massive publications, and anybody who's dealt with special educational needs will be aware of all those publications. So they've gone out to a big audience. Mm-hmm. What sort of response have you had from them?
Bonkers, really. I had no idea at the time quite what response I would get. I didn't know if anybody would read anything I was writing, but it took me by surprise. Mm. I think part of maybe the appeal is that people can see. I think if you're writing about authentic experiences and being really honest and saying, look, you know, this is me, I think people can really pick up on that. Yeah. And I think they can sense if I'm sort of holding back, or so I always try and write about things that are brutally honest. No matter how scary that is. I mean, some of the blogs seem to have had a life of their own, really, and that's been something I've had to learn to accept. You kind of have to let them go. Yeah. Some of the blogs, particularly one I wrote for you about sort of autism and the delayed effects, just went crazy. Yeah. And I had to stop reading the comments, because although there were so many positive comments, it's quite hard to read some things that people say. So that was sort of a process that I've had to learn, to just let go of some of the blogs. Over and above, I think what I've been blown away about is that the hundreds of people that have contacted me, people to say that I've written things that have made them cry, that they've read something I've written, and it's like I was telling their story, and, you know, it's affected them to the point that they felt they needed to contact me and say that, and I can't tell you how humbling that is. And there's nothing more powerful than that. So I think that's the reason why I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing, because it's important that people know. Mums, I think particularly, it can be very isolating and very confusing, particularly if they're waiting so long for a diagnosis. Took my son almost 5 years of getting a diagnosis. And it's so difficult because you can't access services. Yeah. You are judged as a parent. You know, everything you do seems scrutinised. School don't always understand. Yeah. It's so difficult. And I do what I do to let people know that they're not alone in feeling like that, and that there is light at the end of the tunnel. You know, things do get better. There are dark days. Yeah. Things do get better. So over and above, I think that's kind of why I'm going to keep doing what I do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that it does help people. I've certainly had people email me and say, this has been fantastic. I've not been able to explain to school. I've printed it off. I've taken it in. I've shown the teacher. Yeah. And that's a really nice way of supporting people as well, isn't it? As you say, once it's out there, that's going on around the world, yeah?
Which is super. Yeah. Quite scary, really, if I think about it too much. But let that stop me writing. I've just got to carry on, really.
So. Absolutely. Oh, yes, definitely, yeah. Moving on to the focus of the summit now, we're looking at personal, social, emotional development. Obviously, every child is unique. All children develop in slightly different ways. They all have their own little things. But no more so than children on the autistic spectrum. First of all, which is obviously why it's called a spectrum, but first of all, could you just give us a little bit of an overview of what you might expect from a child on the autistic spectrum, and also the sort of major parts of their challenges that they might have with personal, social, emotional development?
Yeah, so I have to admit, Cathy, that when I found out what the topic of the summit was, I felt a bit overwhelmed. I mean, where do I even begin? That's kind of what I thought, because at its very core, autism is a condition that affects how people see the world, how they interact, how they communicate. So I kind of felt a bit like, where do I begin? Because it's, you know, it's so huge. But if you look in the EYFS, personal, social, emotion development is recognised as sort of the building blocks for success in life. Mm. It enables children to interact with others and have growing positive attitudes towards themselves and other people, but obviously it needs adults and other children to model appropriate behaviour for them to be able to develop. And if we look at what the National Autistic Society says about autism, it kind of states that autism is a lifelong developmental disability that affects how a person communicates with and relates to other people, mm-hmm. and how they experience the world around them. So one of the core deficits of autism is communicating and interacting with the world around them. So how can we navigate through all the stages of personal, social and emotional development with children that may never meet all those statements, all those building blocks of development? Some of them may meet some and not others. But obviously each child is different and develops at their own pace. But I think no more can this be seen than with children with autism.
Yeah.
Because it's a spectrum for a reason, because they are all so different. When I worked in mainstream primary, I worked in a resource provision, and we had 8 or 9 children, I think, across the school. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them was different.
Yeah.
Every one of them hit different milestones, had different needs. Yes, they all had that diagnosis of autism, but within that diagnosis, was so many sort of different needs, and it was our job to sort of cater for all those individual needs. And the developmental path that children on the spectrum can take can look very, very different to sort of, you know, children who are not on the autistic spectrum. But it kind of got me thinking, you know, who's to say that that's wrong? Really, it's not, is it? It's just a different way of looking at things. Because children see the world in a completely different way to the way that we do. But I think it's our job as professionals to kind of find a way of bridging the gap between the two worlds, really. Mm. It's not a case of, you know, forcing them into our world. A case of us finding strategies and finding ways to sort of get into their world, to bridge that gap, to open lines of communication for them. But I have to say, it's not easy, you know, working with children on the autism spectrum. You know, hats off to anybody that does it in a mainstream school. I know it's hard work. It's extremely rewarding when you get it right, but it can be very, very hard work. Because, you know, lots of children with autism can have difficulties right across sort of all aspects of daily life. And what we used to found, obviously, was that they would have very sort of spiky profiles. So they would, you know, meet targets, really struggle with some sort of particular areas of personal, social and emotional development, and yet be sort of flying away, you know, in maths or, you know, so you would have these very sort of spiky profile children. So what I thought I would do is sort of look at the various sort of areas of personal, social and emotional development, because it's such a huge area for children with autism, and maybe just sort of focus in on a couple of specific sort of areas of difficulty. Okay, so I thought we'd look first at sort of making relationships. For lots of children, they can have sort of difficulty processing information. They can be quite rigid and quite inflexible with their thoughts and thinking, and can sort of take things that people say quite literally. But can get them into all sorts of trouble in social situations, because they can misunderstand what is being said. They can take something literally. I remember once telling a child, go back down the corridor and wash your hands, and he walked backwards down the corridor. You know, that completely makes sense, because that's what I said to him. Go back. So, you know, so you do have to be very careful about the sort of language that you use with children. And they can also sort of need a longer time to process information, like I said, which can make two-way conversations quite difficult, quite challenging for them, because they simply can't keep up with what's being said. They can't keep up with the pace of the language. And this can make it quite hard to make friendships, because sometimes it can just become all sort of a bit too complicated. Yeah. So it's easier to sort of withdraw themselves than to sort of put themselves, you know, in the centre of it all, because it can just become overwhelming for them, really. Lots of children on the autism spectrum have poor executive functioning skills, which can mean that they can struggle to pay attention. They struggle to plan and organise themselves and sort of recognise and follow what's happening in class. You will often see children with autism a couple of steps behind, sort of following, and people, teachers can assume, well, you know, they must be sort of keeping up because, look, you know, everyone's lined up and there he is, he's lined up. But often if you look really carefully and just sort of take a step back and sort of watch what's going on, you'll see that often they're just a few steps behind everybody else. So they're taking their visual cues from what everybody else is doing, not necessarily knowing that, you know, this is what we're meant to do. But that's a case of sort of observing, really, and taking the time. It's really, really important to just don't sort of throw yourself in there. Just sit back, take your time and observe. I learned so much from observing the children, and you know, looking really, really carefully at the kind of things they do. It tells you so much, and you know, you can make, I think very easily we can make assumptions when you know, working with children. So another thing that they can struggle with is that they can sort of have difficulty controlling their emotions and their behaviours. So children can often act on impulse because they can't always sort of forward think what the consequences of their actions might be. And for some children, it can be a constant battle to match their behaviour to the certain demands that are required of them. For many children, like I said, that's a constant battle, particularly in new and unfamiliar situations, because it involves so much multitasking and forward thinking that it can be very challenging for them. Children on the autism spectrum can find it quite hard sometimes to see the grey areas, particularly in social situations. So there can often be a right answer and a wrong answer, but never an in-between, if that makes sense. Not many grey areas. And if we think about that in the context of sort of social situations, it can make it really hard for them to participate because there are so many hidden nuances and rules, you know, complex interactions. When should I speak? When, you know, talking over people. That there's so many sort of hidden rules. You know, you speak to certain people some ways, you know, you don't approach the head teacher in that way. And lots of these are sort of assumptions that we assume that people know and children pick up on. But for children on the autism spectrum, they can't always see those. So they're hidden. They're hidden rules. And so it's our job to kind of clarify those things for them and navigate these social situations for them. And often they can find themselves in sort of conflicts with other children because they have no room for compromise. You know, it's their way or no way, and they can struggle with that interaction that occurs every day amongst peers in the nursery and in the classroom, because they're so sort of rigid in their thinking and they can't always see things from the other person's point of view. And, you know, having conversations can be really, really difficult for children on the autism spectrum, because if you think about it, it involves so many different skills. We kind of take it for granted and assume, but we forget that so much is, you know, so much processing is going on behind the scenes. And for children on the autism spectrum, it can be really, really difficult to filter out all these things. You've got to read people's facial expressions, maintain eye contact, which can be very difficult for them. Using gesture, you know, for some children on the autism spectrum, you would wave at them and they wouldn't even, you know, they wouldn't know what that was. Reading people's body language, understanding the other person's point of view, gauging the response. and sort of thinking then what to say next. So, you know, that kind of forward thinking and forward planning, that sort of quick fire to and fro of communication can be really, really tricky. We pick up on so much that children on the autism spectrum can find really, really difficult. Like, for instance, I think you've possibly built up a picture of who I already am, because so much is going on subconsciously. You know, you're kind of making judgments all the time from the way people act and how people sound, and that can be a really, really difficult sort of element of the day for children. They can find it really, really hard. As a result of these difficulties, children can find themselves getting into trouble at school. Particularly, I'm thinking of children who don't necessarily have that diagnosis. Children who sort of, in a way, a diagnosis is tricky, really, because yes, it's sort of putting a label on a child. But it also sort of offers a level of protection in some ways, because it sort of makes people a little bit more understanding, I think. If you've got a child that, people are struggling with in school, there's issues, and he hasn't got that diagnosis, it can be very, very tricky for them to navigate their way through school. So it really is vital that children get diagnosed as early as possible, but that's a whole other story, isn't it, really? So I was kind of thinking about the playground for children. This was an area that we had to really staff quite heavily at school, because if there was ever going to be an issue, it was going to be in the playground. You've got all the sort of sensory issues going on in the playground, which is a whole other thing, but all this social interaction. And what we used to find often was, children would sort of be having a game of tag or something, and naturally the game evolves and flows and the rules change. It could be, oh, now the logs are base, or now you're it, or somebody could say, oh, I don't want to play anymore. And for children on the spectrum, that can be really, really difficult, because they've got comfortable with the rules of a game playing in a certain way, and then all of a sudden everyone's shouting, oh, now the logs are the base. Well, hang on a minute, the logs were base a minute ago. So the potential for difficulty in those kind of situations is quite large, really. So, we used to have to staff playtime, sort of three, four members of staff, to kind of, be dealing with all the issues that would be going on in the playground, really. So what you will often find is that lots of children can find themselves getting in trouble at playtime, really. What they will do to sort of compensate is sort of try and take over the game or become quite bossy, and things can very quickly escalate and they can lash out. There's issues for sort of lining up at playtime. Some of them want to, they might want to be at the front of the line, or they don't like people touching them. So playtimes can be a particularly difficult part of the day for children, really. And sadly, it can mean that children get labelled sort of as naughty. I know we shouldn't use that kind of word, really. It's not something we ever did, but amongst the children, I think it's very easy for the child with autism who has difficulties at playtime to become that child that other kids don't want to play with, if that makes sense. You have to work very, very hard to kind of scaffold those times. Those free play times are really, really difficult for children on the spectrum. So anything that we can do, it could be setting up a quiet area of the playground where they can go and take maybe one or two friends to go and play with themselves, so that they're still having that time and interaction, but doing something that's n we're not setting them up to fail, if that makes sense, really. It could be what we used to do with some children was have a buddy system. So we would pair up some of the younger children with an older child, and they love that, the older children, you know, sort of taking responsibility of a younger child. It was kind of classed as a, it was something that the year sixes used to do, and it was like a badge of honour, really.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Another thing we used to do was we used to sort of train the lunch staff, and we used to give them sort of resources and little booklets with visuals that they could take out,
right.
And you know, with simple playground games where the rules are consistent, and again it's kind of, it's adult led, so it's all, you know, it's all being modelled, and they can sort of keep an eye on what's going on. So there's lots of things that can be done. I think it can be quite easy to think, right, well, I'm going to go and grab, you know, it's hard, you don't get a chance to go to the loo.
No.
As a member of staff, you need a coffee. And you're so busy sort of supporting them in the classroom that you think, right, you know, they're outside, I'm just going to nip to the toilet really quickly. But in actual fact, they're probably the times that the children need more support, not less support. What we tend to do is reduce that support at those times. And then we end up coming out the toilet with kids screaming, saying, oh, such and such has hit me, you know, that kind of thing. So, I know funding is an issue, and, you know, but it could be a case of, you know, you go out at playtime to support them at playtime, and then, you know, you can set them up at a quiet task and then nip to the loo or something like that. You know, it's a case of sort of managing your time and seeing playtime as a priority, really, which I think does need to be. And also, it can be difficult for children on the spectrum to understand how their friends can be feeling, you know?
Yes, of course,
Seeing things from the other person's point of view, understanding why they're upset can be difficult for them. And so this can make building sort of close friendships for children really, really challenging. And they can't always see how their actions can impact how other children feel about them. You know, that they might get really, really upset in a game, sort of have a meltdown and lash out, and then 10 minutes later not quite understand why the child that got caught in the kind of thrashing is upset with them.
Yeah.
So it's very important that, you know, once things have calmed down, we revisit those situations and use them as a learning tool. You could use sort of models, books and props. There's all sorts of different things that you could use, but don't try and do it in the heat of the moment. You know, it's very important that you wait, because it can take children a long time. Physically, on the outside, they might appear as if everything's fine and everything's back to normal, but inside they've probably got all these emotions going on, and it is important that we sort of give them time, and then we go back and reflect on it. So, you know, look at what happened, try and get them to see it from the other person's point of view, and then at that point put a strategy in place for, okay, well, if this happens again, you know, what can you do? You could use your visuals, you could, you know, so that's the time to do that, not sort of in the heat of the moment where everything is happening, really. So
yes, when it's all going on. Absolutely.
Yeah. So another area of personal, social and emotional development is sort of self-confidence and self-awareness.
Yeah.
Now, when I was thinking about this, I kind of think this is quite a biggie, really. Well, they're all biggies, that sounds wrong. overwhelming, I think, because for my son particularly, I think he's sort of got used to living in a world where he doesn't quite fit, if that makes sense. He, particularly when he was in mainstream primary, he was the child that was struggling. He was the child that was sort of pacing up and down at the back of the classroom with everyone sort of turning around and going, you know, why is he doing that? He was the one that was, I mean, things got so bad for him that he was sort of self-harming in school. I can't even begin to imagine how that must have felt for him. Living in a world that I think people didn't understand him. He was a problem, if that makes sense. He was a burden. He didn't fit in with everybody. And I think he was sort of, Well, like I said, I can't even begin to imagine how he must have felt. It affected his mental health really, really severely. You know, I've been out with Owen and people stare. You know, people can be rude, people can be judgmental. And it's hard for me, but I have to stop and think to myself, if it's hard for me, how hard must it be for him? You know, how must he feel? You know, imagine living in a world that's actually really, really inflexible. You know, we accuse, not accuse, but we sort of say, you know, children with autism are inflexible, they're rigid, they don't see things from other people's point of view. But I think we're just as guilty of that. Anything, really. You know, we make judgments. We can't necessarily always see it from their point of view. We try and sort of put labels on things to sort of explain it. And I think often people can see autism as something that can be treated. Which is, it's kind of, again, that's a whole other story. But imagine living with that feeling that you were a problem, you were a burden, you had something that, you know, could be cured, could be taken away from you, you could be made to look less autistic. Imagine what that must do to children. You know, signs of sort of autism like hand flapping and stimming. Some people think they're bad and try and stop them, try and force eye contact. I can't think of any other disability that can be treated, not everybody, but, you know, can be treated in such a way. And I can't, like I said, I can't imagine how that would feel. And it made me think of, I don't know if you've ever read The Reason I Jump. Have you ever read it?
Oh, yes, yes, I've got that, yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing book. And it made me think of something that Naoki said. So if I can, I just wanted to read it to you. So somebody said to him, I think I've got the right page for this one, yeah. What's the worst thing about having autism? And he said, you never really notice. Really, you have no idea quite how miserable we are. The people who are looking after us say, minding these kids is really hard work for you. But for us, who are always causing the problems and are useless at pretty much everything we do, you can't begin to imagine how miserable and sad we get.
Wow, that is so powerful, isn't it? And that's a book that was written, correct me if I'm wrong on this, by a Japanese dad. He interviewed his son, didn't he, and spoke to his son and asked him those questions.
Well, he was non-verbal, this boy, but they managed to find a communication device for him. So he was able to, if you haven't read it, I'd like highly recommend getting this book. Because it really makes you think about, you know, seeing things from the child's point of view.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's definitely worth a read. You know, my son very rapidly, because he was living in a world at this point, sort of going back about 3 years ago, where he didn't fit, his mental health deteriorated so quickly. And I think that's something that we need to be very, very cautious of when we're working with children with autism. It can be very tempting to try and force them into our world, to try and say, right, this is a problem behaviour. You know, what can we do to stop them doing this behaviour? But I think we need to just take a step back and think, okay, well, is this behaviour serving a purpose? It most probably is. You know, if you speak to any adult with autism, they will say that stimming is something they need to do. It's something
and
that...
And stimming is that sort of either hand flapping or...
It can be a variety of things. For some people it's hand flapping, for some people it's spinning. My son paces.
Right.
So when my son is anxious, he will pace around and around and around and around. And that's what he needs to do in order to sort of get himself back to where he needs to be. Okay, it might look a little bit strange, but is he doing anybody any harm? Well, no, he's not. You know, it's often a way that children sort of have found themselves to keep themselves regulated. And it's how they cope with being in our world, if that makes sense. And I think, you know, particularly thinking about sort of, you know, self-awareness, do we want these children to kind of be in an environment where they feel out of sync with everybody else, where their stimming is seen as something that should be stopped, you know, put your hands down, quiet hands, all that kind of thing. So I think it's something that we just need to have in the forefront of our minds all the time, you know, in particular reference to this area. Because, you know, anxiety as well is so huge for children with autism. And it's that, you know, have you heard of the sort of round peg square hole thing? You know, we're sort of chipping away at them effectively. I remember hearing a really good analogy, which was a ruler. And, you know, you can bend and bend and bend and bend a ruler. Should have got one, actually. Bend and bend and bend a ruler so much that at some point it's going to snap.
Yeah, yeah.
She can't bend it, you know, up to a certain point and it's going to snap. And that's what life can be like for children. And I think that's what happened with my son. He just got to a point where he'd snapped. And everything around him just collapsed. He went into an acute period of sort of clinical anxiety, was self-harming, was school refusing. And this can be so hard for parents. So many times I've heard teachers say, oh, you know, they can't get him in the morning and they just need to be a bit firmer with him. No, you have no idea. I mean, there were some days I used to drop Owen off at school and I would have spent 2.5 hours of him in complete sort of panic about the day ahead and what he was going to do. I bought one of these, look, so it's this, you know, the kind of I'm not going to open it,
no,
but it's
good.
That kind of shaking of a can thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I would sit in my car in the morning after dropping him off and I would just be exhausted, physically, mentally, emotionally exhausted. It has an impact on the whole family. So I think another key point maybe is to sort of to really listen to the parents. If they're coming in and saying to you, look, you know, you're telling me he's fine at school, but this is what we're having at home, please believe them. Yeah. Please believe the parents. You know, they don't want to come in and have these conversations with you. You know, we would love to just be able to pick our children up at the end of the day and everything be fine. How was your day, son? Oh, yeah, it was great. That would be lovely, you know.
Yeah.
Not attention seekers. We don't say this because, you know, we want to come in school and speak to you. We're saying this because we've reached the end of our tether, because we're exhausted. And I think it's important that we treat parents with that level of respect, because they're professionals in their own children. They're not parents. They know their children inside out. And it can very, very quickly escalate to become a real mental health problem.
Yeah.
And we all know, again, another issue, but mental health services in this country are not the best at all, are they? So, you know, the more we can do to avoid children, you know, needing access to those services, the better, really.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, a big part of that is that these kids need to know that they're valued. They need to know that we respect who they are. They need to know that, yes, their autism is a part of who they are, but they're amazing, just like every other child that comes into the classroom. They're not a problem. They don't have challenging behaviour that we have to stamp out. It's part of who they are. And I think it's our job to, you know, to unpick those issues.
And
see that actually they have a lot to offer the world, really.
So
that was my kind of feeling with self-confidence, really.
So, I mean, we've covered an awful lot there. And there's, as you say, there's been lots of practical advice. There are lots of things to be thinking about. And obviously, as you say, I think that's really interesting about the label as well. Until you get that label, until you get that diagnosis, it's very difficult then to apply some of those things. So you've already given us a few ideas on supporting children in some of those areas. But what would your top tip be? What would be the one thing that you would like practitioners, teachers, parents possibly to go away and think about when thinking about children on the autistic spectrum?
Oh, gosh, top tips.
I know.
So I think probably my take home message would be that if we always assume that children are doing the best in any given situation, then that puts the emphasis on us as the educators to analyse it and what's going on. So don't assume that we have all the answers, because we don't.
Yeah.
and they can teach us as much as we can teach them if we let them. Their autism might prevent them from ticking all those boxes in your assessments, but I think we can very easily become bogged down on what children can't do. So, you know, it's vital that we start where they're at and build on that, if that makes sense, rather than focusing on everything that they can't do. Okay, well, what can they do and how can we extend that? How can we use their special interests to slowly kind of push and build, rather than, oh, well, they can't do that, so that's it, we're going to give up on it. You know, they have as much right as every child that walks through that door in the morning to a full inclusive education. And if that means that we have to think outside the box a little bit, then I think that's what we need to be doing. I think we have to just remember that it's a, just a different way of seeing the world. It's not wrong.
No.
It's different. It can be technicolor and glorious. It can be confusing and really, really mysterious, but it's never wrong. It's never inferior. It's just wonderfully different.
Yeah.
So I think that would kind of be my key message, really.
Absolutely. And that ties in with a lot of your other messages there, with standing back and taking a minute, working out what it is that's actually happening, when children are stimming, when they're going through what it is that they do, why they're doing, is that meeting needs, do we need to stop it? So all of those, that I think that ties that in really nicely, that we do have to just take that minute to understand that their world. Now I know that you have a book, Slice of Autism, and I love the subtitle, which is What's Normal Anyway, and that's, I think that's exactly sums up a lot of what we've covered here today. You can find the link there to the Slice of Autism book, and you can buy that off Amazon or any other good bookshop. And you'll find the link there to the Blogspot, which is also a Slice of Autism, isn't it? And I know that you update that regularly, and there's loads of really great resources on there. I will warn you now, you will have to sit down when you read it, because very often I sit there and weep a few tears and then have to have a reflective think on that. So it's a really, warts and all, as you say, it's a really honest Blogspot, which is great. And as you say, that's exactly what parents need. They need that support as well, don't they? Michelle, we could just sit and talk all day, I know. And
I know,
we have.
I have so much more to say.
But Michelle, that's been absolutely amazing. Thank you so, so much for sharing your expertise with us on the Early Years Web Summit.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure. And thank you very much to our viewers and listeners today on joining us on the Early Years Web Summit, all about personal, social, emotional development.